Mexico border. I'm Amy Goodman in Tucson, Arizona. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's 7:59. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up at 8, we have more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste. And at 9, on the Old Moratti Variety Hour, we have a report on last Saturday's face-off in Portland between neo-fascists and Portland's various anti-fascist forces.
KBOO Community Radio es un orgulloso copatrocinador de Unity.
Una noche de hip hop feminista Latinx.
El martes 20 de agosto a las 9 p.m. en el Dog for Lunch en Portland.
Unity presenta a las artistas Mare Advertencia Lírica de Oaxaca, Valentina Peralta de Chile y las artistas de Portland, Kayla J y DJ La Pauchi.
Nunca fuimos de viaje a Japón.
Este evento también es patrocinado por Colectivo Ruda y Hoop Hoop Creative. Nuevamente.
La mula no era arisca, pero la hicieron. La niña no era feminista, pero aquí nos vemos.
Unity, una noche de hip hop feminista Latinx. Próximo martes 20 de agosto desde las 21 horas en el Dogfear Lounge.
830 y Burnside Street en Portland.
Este es un evento para mayores de 21 años. Encuentra más información en kboo.fm en el lado derecho de la página de inicio, bajo eventos de la comunidad.
Plantita, madre tierra, de mi permiso, de mi permiso, de mi permiso.
Michael Barton, a person with a history of mental illness and obvious dementia, died in the Oregon State Penitentiary after catching what seemed to be a simple case of the flu. As his condition worsened, nurses and medical staff at the prison repeatedly dismissed his pleas for help. While the Department of Corrections' review of Mr. Barton's death called it a systems failure, Disability Rights Oregon concluded that part of that system failure was attributable to a nursing and medical culture that dismissed the needs of patients with disabilities. Join me on Prison Pipeline as we discuss the investigation of the death of Michael Barton. That's Prison Pipeline, August 19th at 6:30 p.m.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.fm via the World Wide Web. Today is Monday, the 19th of August, 2019. You are listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and you're not. And, wow, it's quite a weekend. Lots of activities, and I certainly hope that people will call with their thoughts and their reflections about your weekend. Let me give you our phone number, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If you were have comments about this weekend's activities, it's your opportunity to share before we get more into our programming today. Let me read you a reflection that was posted on social media, an analysis of this weekend's activities in Portland by Eric Ward, who is the executive director of Western States Center here in Portland. He wrote on the 17th, so Saturday evening, his analysis. He writes, "Today's white nationalist rally in Portland, Oregon was a complete rout. The largely non-Portland crowd was mostly abandoned by its leadership the night before. People arrived with no places to sleep and calls to cell phones went unreturned. The morning found hate group members without places to eat, water, and access to restrooms. An increasing number of businesses, like the one pictured, and go to Facebook, Eric Warden has a picture of a business with a sign letting them know that they aren't welcome. So an increasing number of businesses were denying service. The promised five-hour hate rally lasted about 45 minutes. Participants were forced to rally underneath the bridge and then had to beg police to escort them out a very long walk over another bridge, over yet another bridge. Rally leaders then quickly took to their cars to allegedly attend a barbecue that just happened to not be in Portland. Other remnants of the rally were forced to walk around downtown Portland for nearly 2 hours as they searched for their cars. I heard at least two Portlanders give them wrong directions. Tired, thirsty, and walked out, people started to drift away in droves, leaving a dejected-looking Joey Gibson, a leader of the Patriot Prayer, with an increasingly smaller and smaller crowd around him. Not getting the physical confrontation he sought and contemplating his growing civil and criminal legal woes, Joe was very subdued today. Mr. Ward continued to write, after analysis, the social pressure and evolving, diverse, and increasingly fun tactics of pop mob, the seriousness of the police, Portland police, and the number of city civic and business leaders mobilized seem to have taken serious steam out of the white nationalist alt-right protests. It's clear from the speeches and comments today that white nationalist alt-right leaders are wary of the increasing civil suits led by the Oregon Justice Resource Center and criminal liabilities they are facing with disrupting communities. And Mr. Ward concludes, really proud of Portland today, super impressed from the leadership in the streets to City Hall. Folks will be back to political positioning and eating each other alive tomorrow, but hope everyone give each other a small nod of respect tonight. You are an amazing community, Portland, and you showed up this month and it mattered. Community and leadership made this happen. And you showed up with lots of both. So wrote Eric Ward his observation on the activities in Portland this past weekend. So another day, another rally, another struggle as we continue to create a world where justice is a possibility for all peoples. Did you attend the activities? What were some of your thoughts on the what were some of your observations on the Saturday? Give us a call if you like, 503-231-8187, and share your thoughts and your reflections on this weekend's rally. Certainly other things are happening locally and internationally related to something we might have mentioned last week, the fallout from denial of a congresswoman from Detroit area to visit her family refusal of the Israeli government to allow two congressional representatives to visit Palestine, and what's the fallout from that? Is there a way in which people can stand up for justice, and what are the consequences of such actions? And ongoing series of tweets and confusion coming out of the White House, and what is that all about in terms of how we might be able to challenge, change, transform the a nation's national government. What are people saying about that? Related to this is the continuing what I've noticed in terms of media, and I'm particularly interested in your thoughts of the way the media, or those in the media as well as people in conversations I have, sort of, it appears to me as making it equal, the fascists with those who oppose fascism, as if they are two equal sides. And remember year and a half ago, a little bit over a year, when the president sort of equated fascists and those who are opposing fascism as the same. The concern about the talking points that conservatives have of saying that those who oppose fascism should be marked as domestic terrorists, and the way in which that is seen. I'm also concerned about how some of my friends, those who are progressive, have fallen into it, and I'm concerned whether or not I might also fall into by equating them, and I recall and remember friends of mine who were in Ferguson a while ago, and said, and in Charlottesville. Remember that their lives were saved by those who identify as Antifa. Those who are opposing fascism should not be equated with fascists who are seeking to destroy our society. My perspective. Either you are a fascist, and if you're not, then you are anti-fascist. So hopefully we all are all Antifa. And if that's the case, then what are our authorities are saying about those who stand up for the most vulnerable populations in our society, and how do we respond to that? You are listening to More Talk Radio. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we appreciate you to call and share your perspectives on this weekend's activities in Portland, and ways in which we are able to combat white nationalists and their terrorist activities. What are the best practices, as it were? We see this over and over again. Most recently in El Paso, with 22 innocent people were murdered because of this terrorist ideology. Again, we see this repeated earlier. 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. Go back, 9 worshipers, people who participated in a Bible study group at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston. These terror victims are killed by white nationalists over and over again, and people are saying, how do we resist it? Whether or not the president and the U.S. federal government is able and willing to protect people from these white nationalist attacks, and you know, there is that that those talking points that we hear, that those who commit such vicious acts are it's corrupted by video games or use the or they're impacted by mental illness. And again, I think those type of things deflect from the actuality, the reality that white nationalist ideology and actions are the cause of these vicious attacks and on peoples and communities, and how we should be clear about how to resist those things. I thought the phones would be lit up, but as of yet, I don't see any calls. Maybe everyone is asleep. Maybe everyone are satisfied that for the moment the fascists are away and we are on our ordinary plans of life. That is not the case, because believe it or not, even as we think that things are okay, things are not. As this ideology infiltrate the highest, don't like that term, but all levels of government and you know, officials, we need to respond. So what do people think of city's official response? What do people think of the Portland police response? And more interest to me, what was your response and how do you feel about it? Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. We'll have a couple of callers, and let's go to our first caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hey. So, good topics. It seems like you're trying to connect different dots between local and national white supremacy as well as terrorism. I was at the rally in support of Antifa. I don't know if you went to it yourself, Cecil.
I wasn't there.
You were there?
I was not.
Oh, okay. But Joanne and Reverend Montaigne and NAACP had part of the rally. There's Pop Mob and kind of DSA. There's also Antifa itself, Black Bloc. I thought it probably would, I read that thing that Eric Ward wrote a couple days ago as well, so I thought his summation was pretty accurate. And it seems like more progressive forces in general, not necessarily the Democratic Party nationally, but more and more people are saying, well, you're either Antifa and against fascism, or you're Joe Biggs or Joey Gibson, and the dwindling number of people who are supporting or pushing fascism. And there were a ton of Trump signs on the fascist side at the rally.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So did you have other thoughts or critiques or going forward a solution?
So I just wanted to you'd say a little bit more. You mentioned the NAACP and the Pop Mob. What was your sense of the feeling of people down there on Saturday?
Well, one of the organizers that I've met and starting to work with out of Portland State is Paige Christman. She's running for state rep. And Paige also wrote a thing about impressions as well, which I share. Basically that there was a good coalition and a good showing by these different elements. You know, NAACP had a meeting a couple nights before. Rose City Antifa had a meeting Tuesday night last week. Basically, the opposition, the anti-fascists, which indeed should be everyone, seemed to be very focused on diminishing and not getting into what Joey Gibson or Joe Biggs or wanted to advance. We also were looking for information, which you might know or may find out, or Eric might. What people asked me, and I didn't know, what were the names of some of the groups coming from? Like, supposedly there's the Three Percenters, which you may have heard of, but I don't know why they're called 3%, and I couldn't tell people that. And also one of the groups was supposed to be the Daily Stormers, which sounds like they might show up with Nazi regalia, but I didn't find out why or where the Daily Stormers were from. One of the things I was concerned about, and I sort of tried asking you there was for future activity. Like you also, I thought, in your opening remarks today, tied in terrorism and white supremacy to mass shootings, Gilroy, Tree of Life Synagogue, El Paso, et cetera. Basically at Portland State, we are pushing at this point, we being Gray Panthers and our coalition, gun control, and specifically the boycott against Walmart, Walmart being the biggest retailer of guns and ammo. In other words, the idea, and it's fine if you want to interrupt.
Okay.
basically,
you gave me permission, so I'm going to ask you
to. Basically, the idea that if, like what you said, Trump and the Republicans and the NRA are blocking, banning automatic weapons and banning high-capacity magazines. And I think the Tribune had a very long editorial tying some of these elements that you've mentioned together, but saying kind of like housing, that housing
okay.
is this big, long issue that's not really soluble. And one of the ways in boycotts, like Dr. King or Mandela or Cesar Chavez, is boycotts is a way to vote with your dollars now and put pressure from below in democracy, like Elizabeth Warren says,
okay.
to get actual legislation passed.
Okay, Lou, thank you. That's a lot of information when in a few minutes, but I appreciate your reflection on this weekend's rally. Let's go to our next caller. You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio, and I think we have Tom on the phone.
Yeah, here I am. You hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, great. It's good conversation here in the morning, and shout out just at the outset of, you got to give respect to the folks who are putting themselves, their personal safety and their bodies on the line to try and defend, the things we actually believe in as a society here, as a people, to push back against violence, push back against this racism, all of it. And with that said, though, it's still I always think of some of the imagery of the civil rights era, the marches on bridges. I think of that image of Senator Sanders, where he was there, he had handcuffed himself to a woman protesting segregation in schools in Chicago. And it's a tough one here because, I got a lot of respect for people who are willing to go out and confront or put themselves between people who are looking for that opportunity on the far right to use violence and put themselves in between to protect others. And, it's a great motivation, or it's a great reason to do that, to believe in that. And yet, that's still the imagery of wearing masks. I think it's still a very tough thing for a lot of Americans to really, it's a real barrier still.
So let me ask, if that's a difficulty for most Americans, and if it's true that people will confront it differently, what are ways in which you think, other than if wearing a mask is something that's difficult for other people, what are ways in which you recommend people to confront this fascism in their daily lives? Certainly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even just the last caller, mentioned other strategies. But yeah, I mean, what you're asking the right question. Like, where is the participation going to come from everybody, right? Mm-hmm. From most people, those who maybe aren't able or can't make that hard decision to go stand out in front of somebody who's looking for the opportunity to punch him in the face, mm-hmm. or do something terrible. There is still an onus on the majority of people, right? And yeah, that's a very tough question because there's legal strategies that I heard from somebody doing some organizing that the legal strategy that Charlottesville has used somewhat successfully to kind of make the cost of far right gatherings coming back to Charlottesville very high.
Right,
they were successfully able to do that. Somebody has brought that to Mayor Wheeler's office, and still don't really know. I heard you say OJRC is doing something along uh-huh. those lines, which is good.
That is
the question, but yeah, I mean, it should be the kind of event, and I think Pop Mob has a good approach
uh-huh.
where more people feel like there's an avenue for them to be there, and
right.
it's not necessarily a space where it's like, oh, I have to be ready to, get in a fist fight with someone.
you know...
Yeah, it's...
I read something today that there's a group of them, these fascists, parked their cars at a supermarket in North Portland, and you know with all their armors or whatever, and so someone from the store, you know, had those cars towed. So I think it was like 23 cars, and you know, I don't know how much it costs to get your car towed, but make them pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, there are things businesses can do, individuals can do. It's such a hard one there, you know, to be willing to be the protector, and you really got to give respect to people who are going to go out, whether they, you know, they are just doing it, you know, faces open totally in public, or whether they feel they need to like hide, you know, to conceal their own safety, conceal their face. It's a hard one there, because yeah, it does place another barrier. You know, I wasn't alive in the civil rights era, but the real, it is part of a media strategy too, everything that's happening there, and that's something I worry about, that the image that is the message that's trying to be sent,
right?
It makes it harder for people to buy into this. And yeah, why can't we just get on board and say, hey, we're not going to stand for Nazism or the return of fascism? Why aren't we going to do this? Like, we can make that decision, right?
We can. I want to remind people, you know, people always said, like, the civil rights movement or the Vietnam War, or I wasn't alive. This is our moment now. Yes. And so people, our children are going to ask us, where were we? And hopefully they'll look back on this time, 40 years, in the future, and can say, this is what my ancestors did. Hey, thank you so much for calling, Tom.
You bet.
Yes, thank you.
All right, bye.
Goodbye. And our numbers are 503-231-8187. And Celeste, were you downtown on Saturday?
No, I wasn't. I live in a different part, a different city.
Well, you know, those fascists live in a different city.
I actually took the advice of not coming down into town, because I felt I had more to contribute by talking to friends and family and acquaintances who were either concerned and worried or, anxious to be helpful. We've been talking about some of the strategies of the Antifa, and I think one of the things that makes them so hard to swallow for some people is the fact that there have been instances of violence on their part.
You know, there's...
Okay. Now, mostly property destruction.
Okay, I don't want the equivalency between...
There is no equivalency, you know, because, again, the fact that these are people who have come to the support of targets of the white supremacists speaks volumes to their character. But I think that's what makes some people a little anxious. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm just always struck by a conversation I have with Reverend Sekou, and he mentioned, I think it was in Charlottesville, and he said he will always be grateful for those who were labeled as Antifa, and we all should be anti-fascist, but those were the people who protected their lives.
Right. That's what I mean. You know, they have a good report, so to speak, because they have gone out and protected people. But we have a challenge fighting both mainstream and conservative media, who are quick to characterize any group that confronts violence, either with nonviolent tactics or some measure of violence, or and I think this might be a better way to characterize it, some measure of property destruction. That's a little different, because when we talk about violence, we will make sure we're clear that this is person on person violence, you know, harm. But the challenge is, even if there is a good report, it's going to be twisted by conservative media and mainstream media. And case in point, there is no effort on the part of the White House, or at least it has been articulated, to characterize the right-wing protesters as domestic terrorists. Yeah. Yet Antifa and organizations like Black Lives Matter and even more benign organizations that are culturally focused on issues affecting Black people are threatened with being called domestic terrorists.
Unless we forget, in 1968, just before he was assassinated, Martin Luther King was despised by most Americans.
Yes.
Our numbers
about to be a terrorist.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Yeah, that whole thing about, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go to Eddie. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Eddie.
Or Edie?
Good morning. Good morning.
Eddie?
So I was. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I was at the Timbers opening game this year, and someone flew a Trump flag.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear, 20,000 people got to their feet and screamed that guy out of the stadium. Like, it was almost dangerous, right? The mm-hmm. security got him out and no. so forth. And I think it's important for decent people to stand up, you know, to this sort of thing. I guess I was not downtown the other day, and I guess it's an ethical quandary, because I know that the Proud Boys and whatnot, you know, they were provocateurs. They wanted a response, right?
Yes.
Which they then boasted that they, you know, they were able to achieve. And I think, on the one hand, it's great people, you know, locked their doors, gave them bad directions, and they sort of slunk away. I wonder if they had simply been completely ignored, their little thing would have petered out and they would have gone home to their barbecue. On the other hand, I wonder if it's sort of incumbent on any decent person to go down there and counter protest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I guess the question would be, how would we counter protest? How would we prepare? Because some people have gone to these events with the intention of counter protest, and they've either been harmed by the right-wing, Proud Boy, neo-fascist group, or some people have been harmed by fallout and collateral damage from the law enforcement. So I guess people are a little wary of getting caught, but I do appreciate what you're saying. I think what it is a matter of coming up with some safety measures, some strategies. I mean, people wear masks and they cover their faces with bandanas to protect themselves from tear gas and pepper spray. You know, some people wear helmets for that very reason. How many people are feeling comfortable with the thought that they have to put their body on the line? That's not something here in the States that we've grown up with for the past few generations. So it might take a bit of mental shifting. We're not at the same point as they are in Hong Kong, for example.
Great. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks. Well, you know, I wasn't saying you were wrong. I'm just saying, you know, we need to come up with some strategies to help people feel that they can successfully physically engage if that's what they want to do.
I saw also something on social media. It was a news story about mm-hmm. something I'm sure many other people have seen it too, about what happened in a town in Germany where annually Nazis came and protested,
mm-hmm.
and so how they countered was something. One was raise money.
Okay.
And so for each step, and you know, someone pledged, I will give so much money to this organization which help people to get out of these racist groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sort of like in sort of like I think what the pop mob did a little bit was sort of like invited them, welcomed them. So like, okay, Nazis, you're coming to our town,
mm-hmm.
we'll welcome you, and we'll pay, I don't know, you know, $5 for every step you take. And mm-hmm. so they even mark on the on their march route, mm-hmm. 5,000 steps, you raise, you know, X number of money for anti-fascist group. and so that they would literally, they mark where they were walking mm-hmm. and letting them know that they were raising money opposing their group. So what I enjoyed about that and the pop mob is it's sort of like being creative.
Yes.
About how to resist these terrible groups.
Thinking deeply on ways to diffuse their message.
Right. And also realizing that, for me at least, that even if you claim to be peaceful and nonviolent, mm-hmm. that doesn't protect you from being the recipients of violence.
Although civil rights marchers know that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
John Lewis can tell us many stories. Let us go to our next caller. And Robbie, are you still there?
Yeah, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I just wanted to share some words with y'all, some stuff to help. You've obviously heard Antifa being called fascists.
Yes.
So here's something that I've been basically explaining to individuals who say that around me. And basically, Antifa exists because fascists exist. And that 10-year-old child mentality of calling the person who called you a fascist because you called them a fascist is very weak. Hmm. So that's one thing that I think we need to, you know, people who say that, we need to say, no, Antifa exists because fascists exist. And people who are racist and supporting and justifying the separation of families based on their immigration status is the start of a fascist regime. So it's like, whenever people say that, I you know, it's like, it's I see conversations sometimes get derailed. Also, the current administration, you know, basically the government will never admit that it's a fascist government or that it's becoming a fascist government. But what it will declare is that it is Antifa is now, you know, enemies of the state.
Yes.
And that's how a fascist government starts. I just wanted to share that. One other thing that I just wanted to let your listeners know about was, that was I thought Saturday went really well. A week ago, I thought it was going to be really bad. Saturday came and it wasn't as bad as I think what a lot of people expected. But with that being said, I just wanted to say one last thing. Bernie Sanders' campaign is the only Democratic campaign runner who has basically declared war on white nationalism with his platform. I just want to let your listeners know he's the only candidate that's ever said that. And thank you very much. Keep on fighting the good fight. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for mentioning that. I actually have the article in front of me, and I was going to say that. Newsweek had the article 8/17/19 by Scott McDonald, and Bernie has indeed declared war on white nationalism and racism. He's saying he'd use every tool at his disposal, including executive orders. This was at the Young Leaders Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, and Sanders goes on to discuss his background being, his family background being Jewish and from Poland. So he's extremely sensitive to this whole idea of the threat of white nationalism, especially since it wiped out his family. But I again want to emphasize that whereas this at this particular stage is a promise, what we need are to come up with more and more strategies like Cecil mentioned that took place in the city that used the white national activity as a fundraising activity, which funded activities to counter their work. And then as Eddie was saying earlier, you know, what can we do? How can we, you know, let's think about ways we can present ourselves to make sure that we are somewhere on the line, if not necessarily the front line, somewhere on the line to help battle this. I think that the fact that Bernie Sanders has said that he would combat it is really important. I don't think it is as incumbent on Kamala Harris to say that, being a person of color, it's we hope that she's sensitive to it, but I really am appreciative of the fact that Bernie did articulate it, especially given his rocky start of his last run for office.
I know, and you know, everyone's going down to South Carolina now.
Mm-hmm.
There are black people there, so
yeah, we got to go right talk to them.
You are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. Coming up at 9 is the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10 is Locus Focus. We hear excerpts from a community forum held by the City of Portland to talk about Zenith Energy to export crude oil through Portland. At 11, it is First Voices Radio. And all of these programs can be heard on the air at KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play, and KBOO programs are made possible by your support. So go to KBOO.FM and use our mobile app and click on donate. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil, and I'm so pleased to sit here with Celeste.
And I am likewise pleased to sit here with Cecil.
And we are both pleased to talk to
you.
To you. So, William, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to expand on what Cecil said about video games desensitizing people to violence.
Mm-hmm.
And expand it to action films and action shows on TV that also desensitize people, and also eating animals. The factory farming industry, which many people turn away from or put their head in the sand about, desensitizes us to violence. And we need to, I think, expand our compassion beyond just all people, but to all animals.
Well, I do appreciate what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I don't see it the same way. I do not like factory farming, however. But at this particular time in my life, I'm a committed meat eater. So, you know, I appreciate it when people tell me that they have feelings against eating animals. I listen, but I like them, I have my own opinion. But regarding the desensitizing of us toward murder and mayhem and violence in TV and video games, I wholeheartedly agree. I was sitting up with some friends and watching the series that was filmed here, Grimm, and I was remarking to my friend that this is a very violent show. At least two people are probably going to die in the show, and horribly. And you know, this is mainstream prime time media.
They call it. They call it entertainment.
Yeah,
it's not entertainment.
And so, you know, we do have a problem with how we indoctrinate ourselves. People want to say it's just a game, but any business, any organization that does training will tell you that one of the means of training is to watch something repeatedly so that your brain forms some neural networks. Now, whether you watch a live action or a recorded action really doesn't make that much difference to your brain. It's the seeing and the processing of what you're seeing. And then there's the muscle memory, you know, that comes with that. And so, I mean, I agree about the whole thing with us needing, no, I take that back. We don't need an outlet for violence. We are conditioned to believe we need an outlet for violence. It's one of those Hegelian problems where you make the problem and then you offer a solution.
Yeah, right. We do create it. I'd like to add, Celeste, that I used to eat meat 4 or 5 times a day. Then I heard about the Dean Ornish program for reversing heart disease, and I noticed that I was getting worse even though I was eating the so-called healthy chicken and fish.
What, 5 times a day?
Yeah, well, you know, snacks, yeah.
I don't eat that much.
good. Anyway, on the Dean Ornish program, because meat is 50% fat.
Well, some meat.
I had to cut back. No, even lean meat.
No, it's not 50% fat.
Calorie-wise, yes.
No, it's not. I took nutrition when I went to nursing school. Lean meat is not 50% fat. You can look it up.
That's what Dean Ornish says, so
well,
you argue with him.
I'm not going to argue. I just disagree. Okay. But anyway, you know, I would say excess was your challenge.
So I went to eating meat about once a week.
Mm-hmm.
After about 6 or 7 years of doing that and lowering my cholesterol from 240 down to 130,
mm-hmm.
I could start to feel compassion for the animals. It literally desensitized me before that. I couldn't think about it. And now I've been vegan for 19 years.
Well, good for you. I appreciate that.
Well, it's good for the planet, and it's good for everybody.
Well,
and,
that's your opinion.
You're open your mind to it.
That's your opinion. But I appreciate hearing from you.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And with that slight disagreement between our vegan caller and Celeste, let's go to Helen. Good morning, Helen.
Hi. Let's pretend we don't know anything about what goes on. Doesn't Proud Boys sound like a really good group as compared to anti-fascists?
Yeah. Maybe just like Promise Keepers and
Patriot Prayer.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, so the problem that we have is the people on the left or whatever who care, we are trying to take care of things, but we don't know how to do it. And the people like the Proud Boys, if they come once a month, it's just going to, I mean, they'll really be able to do a number on the anti-fascists. So maybe the anti-fascists need to change their name, like, to the good people. They need to erase that so Trump can't think that he can get rid of all those people. I mean, he will work on that. Unless the head of police, if she gets up and speaks, and maybe she could have the anti-fascists be part of the police. You know, there's something's got to be done.
Well, now, I'm not sure about having them be part of the police without training. You know, we've accused the police of using, was it the Patriot Prayer group last year? I think it was. We accused the police of using them, and I'm not sure if I want either group involved in policing.
Okay.
But in terms of personal safety, you know, I guess as far as the Antifa group is concerned, they were like, I don't know, truth in labeling, you know, just real basic. Well,
right.
We're anti-fascist. You know, you have a good point, though. It's like a name is everything.
Anti is negative.
Mm-hmm.
And so what
or against. It just means against.
Against.
It doesn't necessarily mean negative.
It what?
It doesn't necessarily mean negative. It just means against.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I just get concerned about how Trump gets away with everything.
Yes.
And I just hope that maybe the mayor will stand up to what Trump is saying, because this could really, like I say, maybe they just need to get rid of the anti-fascists altogether and think of a different name. It's like Protectors of Portland. Maybe that's what they need to do. Something different, so Trump can't zero in on them.
Okay.
All right.
Those are thoughts.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, labeling is important.
Yes, it is.
But, again, and respond to people who proclaim, mm-hmm. you have to, anti- meaning just against.
Mm-hmm.
So this is who, because you're opposing them. But, you know.
Well, that's why I said maybe they just went for truth and labeling and just kept it plain.
And that's why you have things like the pop mob and stuff like that, mm-hmm. this weekend. It's like, yes.
Well, you know, kind of to respond to what she's saying, too, I appreciate what she's saying about how Trump will take something and twist it. The truth is, he's going to do that with whatever name they come up with. Mm-hmm. If they change the name, he'll come up with a way to denigrate them still. Our point is to remain vigilant and diligent in terms of listening to what he's really saying behind his words and speaking truth to unauthorized power, illegitimate power.
We have about 10 minutes left, so let's see if we can speak with Lily.
Looks like Lily. Good morning. Lily, hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
So I am terrified about the effects, really, of fear. I feel like fear can really paralyze us, and on a personal level, I feel like that's how the effects of what's happening is affecting me personally. And I'm not hearing much from people talking about how they deal with their fear. And, you know, I hear about combating, and I hear about a war on this and a war on that, but I just, on a personal level, you know, I am really, really afraid. And, you know, everyone I know is also very afraid. And
can you share something about
what your fear?
Well, I think, you know, my background comes from the Holocaust, and so that's where I go with that. And I also think that what happens is that our personal trauma gets triggered when there's other, you know, when there's other trauma. So I just, I think that one response that I think, you know, just throughout history is that, like, you know, Hitler wanted to create fear in people, and Trump's doing the same thing. And as much as I would like to not be afraid, I am. You know, this is just really, really difficult. It's really difficult times. And
what kinds of information or acts would make you feel less afraid?
Well, I mean, you know, things that I've done in the past, you know, where I have gone with a group of people and either, you know, set up a quiet circle or meditation. There was a group that did that on Saturday. But I just, you know, I think it's just overwhelming, the layers and layers of violence that is around us every day. And, you know, I'm really sensitive to that.
And I think what you mentioned in terms of things you've done in terms of groups and gathering with people, are ways in which I confront the fear that I face, know that I'm not alone, and a circle that's supportive is very powerful.
And talk to people and find out where they are, and sometimes you might share some of your personal history as to why this concerns you, so people can understand that the threats are real. We're not talking about some abstract or intellectualizing where somebody may shush us or tell us our idea is not popular. We're talking about actual violence that has happened in the past. And it's important to never forget.
Right, and I think what's happening is that just general people are getting insensitized. You know, oh, that's another shooting, and that's another violent activity, and it's just, you know, so it's just all a balance, I think, being active and then taking time for ourselves, too. But it's just, I really appreciate your program a lot. It's kind of my anchor for the week.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, too.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can speak with Michael.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can.
Oh, okay. So I have a serious comment and a slightly less serious comment. The serious comment is, I was a philosophy major in college, and we learned this ethical principle called universalizability, which was, you're moral if the principle under which you act, you're willing to have that principle be the principle that everyone else is judged by. So if Antifa decides, because our beliefs are so righteous, we're allowed to use violence in the streets because the people we don't like have different beliefs than we do, then are they willing to have that be universalized? Are they willing to say, or are you willing to say, okay, any group that feels righteous has the right to use violence in the streets? So, I mean, I think Antifa would be much better off if they were nonviolent, but that's not the route they've chosen to go on. And Their violence hands a weapon to their enemies.
Yeah, the issue I have is that I think I agree with much of what you said, but also realize that those who are nonviolent, they are also the recipients of violence. So even if you are gather with groups who believe with you in nonviolence, that doesn't safeguard you or your people against those who are the originators of the violence act.
And if you fight back, I mean, well, that in and of itself is a violent act. And so how do you then condemn violence if you have to fight back? Because I can't say I'm going to stand there and let somebody hit me in the head. I just don't see that happening.
Well, fighting back is a different, you know, you could universalize fighting back. You know, what I could have said more precisely now that you're bringing that up is that initiating violence.
Okay.
You want to make that universalizable?
Okay.
Defending yourself once someone else is initiated, that's a different thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, we're a little short of time. I wish you called earlier. You're bringing up a good point, and I think that's one reason why people are afraid of, some people are afraid of Antifa. But also, we don't know whether they have actually initialized any violence. And so it's really critical to be clear on the dynamics when we're trying to figure out how to characterize something and decide whether it's going to be an option, a choice, a procedure, you know, a universal force or what. But thank you for the conversation.
Hey, one more thing about initiating violence.
Well, we're actually out of time. We got one more person behind you.
And let's see if we can get Edie in.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
So that I would like to tell you is that I will never criticize Antifa. If we want to have different names, then create your own organization and state positively what it is that you are for. And that's exactly what they did. I'd like to thank online, on the air, that some of the organizations were involved in the coalition with Popular Mobilization, Pop Mob. There was Rose City Antifa, Portland Jobs is Justice, NAACP Portland, Portland Democratic Socialists of America, Buddhist Peace Fellowship, Interfaith Clergy Resistance, Animal Rights March Portland, our Vegans Against Fascists, Portland Assembly, Portland International Workers of the World, Unprecedented Brass Band, Queer Liberation Front, and many, many more. So each group was saying, this is what we stand for. We stand for liberty, equality, protection, safety, justice for all.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what anarchy is. It is standing in solidarity with all people against oppression and mutual aid and local defense and local decision making, direct action to solve our problems. It is against oppression in any form. And historically, over hundreds of years, we have seen that when fascists come in using violence to control and terrorize, they lose power, they lose credibility, they lose membership, and they lose effectiveness when they are met in large numbers, very forcefully, by the community saying, not in our community. So we need to have thousands of us out here. And then second, a few who are directly saying, you will not use violence. If we stand down and do nothing, they've come from across the country to mobilize, to fundraise, to recruit. And the way they do that is through violence.
Hey, thank you so much, Edie. We're out of time.
We're out of time, Edie.
Hey, thank you for that summation of anarchism
and the rallying cry for people to get up and be against the fascists. You have been listening to More Talk Radio on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. We thank you for your calls. We really thank those who are financially supporting KBOO. You are truly important. You can hear all of these KBOO programs that air on KBOO on iTunes or Google Play. And speaking of programs, 9 o'clock comes the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10 o'clock, Locus Focus. And 11 o'clock, it's First Voices Radio. To hear these programs, go to kboo.fm. Use your mobile app. And we will hear you again here on More Talk Radio.
The time is 8:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Next up, we have the Old Mo Variety Hour.
Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stephen Marley, Babylon by Bus Tour on Friday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Roseland Theater in Portland. The second son of Bob and Rita Marley, eight-time Grammy-winning musician and producer Stephen Marley, will perform in Portland with DJ Sasha Pena, who will be opening the show. Again, that's Stephen Marley, Babylon by Bus Tour on Friday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Roseland Theater, 8 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. By some old